Thank you for standing by. I would like to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would like to introduce your host for today's call. We have Ms. Julie Hedlund. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you very much, Lori. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone here. This is the Internationalized Registration Working Group call on Monday, March 29th. Thank you all for joining us. I'd like to briefly do a roll call, please. From the working group, we have the chair, Edmund Chung. We also have Andrei Kolesnikov, Ram Mohan, Rafik Damik, and Owen Smigalski. And we also have from staff David Piscatello, Steve Sheng, and Julie Hedlund. Welcome to all of you. And Edmund, if you'd like, I have a suggestion for our agenda for your consideration.
Sure.
For all of the working group members on this call, Steve Sheng sent around earlier today a matrix. This was a matrix that was discussed. I do see we have another person who's joined. It's Bob Hutchinson. Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Julie Hedlund. Welcome. We're just getting started. We just did a roll call, and I was just suggesting that perhaps as our agenda item today, Steve Sheng had sent around the draft matrix that was requested on our last working group call on March 15th. The matrix identifies three different models for registration data and the impact of each model on potential stakeholders. I'd like to suggest to our chair, Edmund Chung, that perhaps we could look at this draft matrix on this call and go through the different elements and discuss them. Edmund, what do you think about that?
I'm looking at the matrix right now. That seems reasonable from following from last meeting.
Great, wonderful. And then what I would like to do actually is to ask Steve Sheng, who had put together the matrix, to perhaps lead us in a discussion of the matrix, going through each of the elements, and perhaps we can discuss them one at a time and the different models and so forth. Steve, will that be okay for you?
Sure, Julie. Thanks.
Great.
So the matrix, in the last meeting, we think that a matrix that basically kind of systematically explore the various models on the table of their impact to the registrars, registries, registrants, and the user of Whois would be helpful. So we have I sent earlier today a draft matrix. Basically, it's essentially a first cut from the staff. We understand that there's considerable expertise and representation from registrars, registries, and various constituencies in these working groups. So we look forward for your feedback on this work. So roughly, to start with, if you have a moment, if you can pull out the Excel spreadsheet. We have three models currently under consideration. This is the initial three models that were summarized from past deliberations. You know, it doesn't have to be these three models. We can add more models to explore as well. But to start, the first model is basically, you know, require a must be present language in Whois. In addition to that, given an option to provide data in local languages. So the second model is essentially registrants can provide their registration data in whatever language or script that can be accepted by the registrar. But it's up to the registrar to provide a point of contact for the translation of those records when there's a request is being made. So the third model is very similar, not very, it's in some way somewhat similar to the first model, is that it's requiring both a must-be-present language and also additional language. But the difference here is registrants still can provide their registration data in whatever language the registrar can accept, but it is up to the registrar to provide a translation or transliteration of the registration record. So those are the three initial models under discussion. So to systematically kind of consider the pros and cons of each, we consider its impact to the various stakeholders. So on the first column, on column A on the left, you know, we have impact to registrars. Here we separate out to the existing registrars and to the new IDM-based registrars. Then we consider the impact to registries. Here we separate out impact to thin registries, like in the .com model, and to thick registries, like .org and others. Okay, and we consider impact to registrant. And finally, we consider the impact of each of this model to the users of Whois. And here, when we mean users of Whois, we separate it into three subcategories. So the first category is a local user of Whois that knows the local language. For example, a Japanese user, you know, who also receive Whois in Japanese. And the second is a local user, a type of user that receive Whois in any language but local language. So, for example, a Chinese registrant who does not know like Indian or Japanese but need to look up domain names registered by registrants of those countries. So that's the second category. And the last category is legitimate automation user, basically someone that, you know, would use Whois legitimately for some automated purposes, for example, compliance, accuracy reports, such. So that's a brief introduction of the matrix. So before going forward, discussing each of the models, I would like to see, are there any comments from the participants of the working group on the structure of the exercise and the different categories, stakeholders that we've considered?
Yeah, this is Bob Hutchison. Thanks for putting this together, Steve, and I guess I would like to see added as an impact the three different models, the impact on the Whois system itself in terms of its data storage. And
so just to clarify, you mean the impact to Whois system in storage. So these impact can occur, you know, both, you know, registrars could to take some impact, and registries could take some impact as well. So are you suggesting a new category, or in the existing categories, we consider the impact to the Whois system in that each of those maintains?
Yeah, you have three different models. I'm not asking adding models. I'm asking to add another set of impacts, which is the impact to the for that model on the existing Whois system itself.
Okay, sure.
Like RFC standards?
Yes. Uh-huh. In other words, there's a number of ways we can look at the problem that's in front of us. A lot of what we've been discussing have to do with what I consider to be policy issues. There's another way to look at this problem. I think Steve Metalis, I don't know if he's on the line, has mentioned it, which is just look at it from this, from the pure data processing standpoint. Don't look at it from a policy standpoint. just build a system that will do the worst case of these three models, for example, okay, and let somebody else deal with the policy.
Okay, thanks.
Steve, this is Ram.
Hi, Ram.
Hi. Thank you for putting this together. I think the structure is fine. It provides a good way to look at the overall landscape. I wanted to speak just briefly on impact to registries. Under impact to registries, you've said to thick registries in Model 1 and Model 3, you've said thick registries can set a standard regarding what language and encoding they want, and registrars have to comply. I don't believe this is actually the case, because at the end of the day, all a thick registry is doing is putting out data in regular standard ASCII right now, and registrars simply conform to that. So it, in some ways, it's really not very different from the thin who is case, particularly in cases where it's just ASCII based.
Thanks.
Rob, this is Dave. That's actually my comment in the matrix, and my understanding was that certain registries would not accept UTF-8 if it was submitted to them, that they would reject it and say, no, it must be ASCII-7. And that's the kind of criteria we were thinking of, not anything beyond that.
Okay, so I think the text has to be modified a little bit, because it's not, that clarity is not here. This seems to be more about output from registries rather than input into registries.
Yeah, well, this is just staff trying to go through and get some discussion points, and actually we were relying on people like yourself and the registrars to embellish on what the problems were, because we...
Yeah. I guess my take on the some of this is that, you know, if you're not accepting UTF-8, then why do we have this working group? That, you know, kind of part of what we're trying to do here is to reflect the new reality that registrants, especially with IDNs becoming more prevalent, registrants are likely to give information in UTF-8. And having a UTF-7, you know, or a 7-bit solution doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
I agree. And we're just trying to – I think the reason why we put the matrix together was that we were, in prior conversations, wandering in and out of these three different models, and we thought that perhaps if we were able to build the matrix in this manner, we could focus on the specific issues – within each scenario, and then if the conclusion is the world's got to be UTF-8, and policy development ought to acknowledge that, and technology development ought to acknowledge that, and automation ought to acknowledge that, then I think that's an important conclusion that this working group would present to the GNSO and to, you know, and to the community.
Understand. Thank you for that clarification. I guess from the bias that I bring in to this working group and this discussion is twofold. One is that, you know, folks do need to find some way to have some potentially uniform representational guidelines or representational characteristics. But at the same time, I don't think we can forget folks who need or who are only able to display data in their local script. So, I mean, that's kind of the balancing act. So that's my own bias, is to ensure that the local script piece is not forgotten. The other comment I had on under impact to registrars, which I thought might be something that, you know, we should parse a little bit more, is between the three models, there are words like significant increase in the cost, some increase in the cost, et cetera. And if you're going to make variations in that, then we probably ought to be a bit more precise. because otherwise, you know, it can get lost in the semantics. What is the difference between a significant increase in Model 3 versus an increase in Models 2 and 1? So those are my two comments or suggestions, Steve.
Thanks, Ron.
I can talk about cost.
Actually, this is Julie. I just want to remind everybody, please do announce yourself each time you speak because it does help with the transcribing. Thanks so much. Sorry for the interruption.
Hi, this is Steve. These are great comments. I think some of them are relating to, you know, each different sections mean. And I just want to reiterate that the staff is only, you know, kind of doing a first cut, and we're really relying on, for example, you know, representative from registrars or registries to help us fine-tune that and make sure that the language we put in is correct and suggest the most correct language. So with that, are there any further comments on the structure of this exercise? If not, we're going maybe, you know, model by model and, you know, stakeholder by stakeholder. Here and now. So can we go to model one, impact to registrars? So in this model, we require and must be present as well as a local language. Are there anyone from running registrar can respond to?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I can speak. Regarding the price, regarding the cost increase, it's a general comment because I think it will apply to any of the models. In general, any technical development or upgrade of the system is a way cheaper than any organizational additional costs, like the translation or manual procedures, or, you know, finding the person who understands the language, etc. So I believe that the command in the Model 1 to existing registrars, if they do adopt to use a local script, then it presents additional cost for them to store the data. I don't think that storing the data is adding the additional cost. That's my command.
Thanks. Is that Andrew?
Yes, it's Andrew.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. I'm taking down carefully. Any other thoughts? Okay. What about Model 1's impact to registries? Ram already taken down your comments. So let me see if I can paraphrase it. What you're saying is currently there's no difference to thin and thick registries with the respect of the impact of Model 1. And merely is registries, let's say, requiring or ASCII or UTF-8, and then the registrar will provide those information in that encoding. Is that correct?
This is Ram. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Another question we have on this is: would the SIG registry would a registry plan to include, you know, in Model 1 languages other than the must be present language? So, for example, if a Chinese registrant or Japanese registrant register a .org domain, you know, from a register in China or Japan and provide the local language, would the registry be able to show Chinese or Japanese in the registry's who is?
This is Ram. The answer is actually it depends. In general, if you look at the org registry, most registries, they certainly have the capability to display language in both, display data in both the must be present language as well as local languages. storing that in an EPP-based system is quite trivial. Displaying it, however, is where some of the challenges come up, and that would be, today it is defined by registry policy. So if you look at the .asia registry or the .info registry or .org, et cetera, if there is local internationalized registration data in a local character set on a web page, that can be displayed using HTML escape characters, and it's, you know, it's ASCII-ish because HTML escape characters allow you the flexibility. In the registry itself, registries have to make certain that the databases that they're using can support UTF-8, because if you have the data coming in, EPP supports UTF-8. So if data comes into the registry in UTF-8, there is no guarantee that it'll get stored in UTF-8. So we had to ensure that the database itself is UTF-8 compliant, otherwise we'll have data loss or worse, data corruption.
That's a great point. Andrew, you're from a ccTLD. I was wondering what kind of format does .ru use to store the...
Currently we use ASCII for .ru. And also, we will keep the ASCII format for the .ref for the IDN registration.
Okay.
And it's basically related mostly to the demand of the, you know, different legal and, you know, enforcement agencies who really don't want to lose, you know, track, and they need to understand the data. And the resolution of this problem, which we're talking is... you know, we took a simple approach. We basically put the Russian language in the Latin script. So far, for 15 years, somehow it works. And I should say about the technical capabilities. Yeah, the database which we're using, which is basically Oracle and the UTF-8.
Okay.
So we can store any char set. Thank you.
Okay, that's good to know. Sure, UTF-8. All right, that's good. Any other thoughts and comments on the Model 1's impact to registries?
This is Ram. Sorry to monopolize the registries piece of the data, but I think there is really, in addition to there not being a big difference between thin and thick registries in terms of how the data is stored, I think one of the things that we should potentially consider in this working group is what are we going to do about statuses? And I don't know if that's already been covered elsewhere, but, you know, we have several statuses for a domain name. It can be in transfer pending. It can be in redemption grace period. It can be active, et cetera. And is there a need to have those be made accessible in local languages as well? Now, that will actually pose, at least from a GTLD perspective, that will pose a little bit more of a implementation challenge as compared to simply adding more objects, more registration objects in multiple languages to just hold in.
That's an excellent point.
We have actually had a separate discussion that is, I think, a derivative of this discussion, which is whether it's necessary to provide the entirety of the domain record in local language, or whether it would be appropriate or sufficient to only have continue the current practice of having the registrar provide what the registrar's information is in ASCII 7 only. So I think that's like some people. You know, have suggested that we could separate out contact information and establish conventions for them for catering to local languages, because that's something registrants supply. and the information that registrars supply could continue to be provided in the manner that it currently is for GTLDs, which is in ASCII 7.
Thanks, Dave. Comments, thoughts? Let's move on to, let me take a note of that issue for discussion. So moving on to the impact to registrant for Model 1, are there any advocates of registrants right on the call that can tell us whether we've thought about the impact carefully?
Okay, hi, this is Avery. I'm not sure I qualify as an advocate of registrant's rights, but I'll play one
for the
purpose of the conversation. So in terms of Model 1, I think you've basically got, Model 1. I think you do have it correct in terms of the user receiving it in local as opposed to, as also to the one receiving it in any language other because both of them are there. So I think that this for the registrant is indicated correctly.
Thanks.
I don't know what to say about automation users, but I assume that it's correct that there's little impact.
Right. But that's for registrant. So,
Steve, this is Ram.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was looking at both users and registrant.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I was looking at the wrong place.
Okay, sure. Ram, go ahead.
I too look at both registrants and users kind of in a commingled way. And the only thing to consider is that we cannot look at who is just as a system in and of itself. Quite a lot of the user experience is going to be dictated by the application level usability, and if the applications don't support UTF-8, it doesn't matter if the data that is being sent through is in UTF-8. So I think somewhere you got to just put a disclaimer that says that it's only going to be as good as, you know, at the user level. But certainly in places like India, there are plenty of spots where IE5 is still the prevailing browser. And, you know, good luck trying to show IDN stuff in a proper user-friendly format.
That's an excellent point, Ron. So would you suggest we put another category, saying applications, consider?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, with your suggestion. I think that really is the elephant in the room. That's where the biggest amount of change has to happen or advocacy has to happen if data really has to be, you know, made universally accessible in local languages.
Okay. Others, thoughts, comments?
This is Aubrey again. So if I understand correctly, it's not you're adding a category of impact to the applications that people use because it'll work for the registrants, but only if somebody has fixed the app.
That's Aubrey, this is Ram. That's correct. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes.
This is Dave. That's true for a lot of Whois applications as well and operating systems. I mean, what play will have to do with what, you know, what fonts and character set support exists on the client, right?
Right. And Dave, this is Ram. One thing that since we're talking about looking at this in a somewhat comprehensive way, one thing that is possible to do is as a working group to make a recommendation that says add a field that says if you cannot see this, go here to download appropriate tools or look at minimum requirements or something like that to provide users some clue potentially.
This again. Yeah, I would think that something like that would be a good idea because I would think that there's no barrier at this point for most of the languages we're talking in IDN in terms of getting more recent tools that, that can handle the IDN, et cetera.
Thanks, Avery. I've taken a note of that. So for impact to applications, what are the are there any subcategories we want to consider? I'm trying to think if staff were to ask to take a first pass at it, what are the areas that we should consider? Web application, the browser, that port 43. Any thoughts?
Steve, this is Ram.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a first place necessarily. There's certainly the browser, but it depends on what the users are utilizing, right?
Right.
Yeah, this is Andre. Maybe we should call it the use case, like who's actually the using the system, because it can be robots or it can be real people. 99% of the real people use a web interface. Thank you. I like the dog.
Sorry.
Okay. Right. So, any other thoughts on Model 1 on its various impact to registrars, registries, registrants, and users of WHOIS?
This is Ram. Without trying to, when I look at options 1, 2, and 3, my perspective is 1 seems to have the least amount of impact potentially to registrars and registries, but in so doing, it may also have the least amount of use because local language display is purely optional, and that may therefore not have the kind of universal utility value that we may be looking to advocate. But having said that, I mean, to me, Model 1 is, it feels like it's the least common denominator option. And, down the road when we do comparisons, that's something to keep in mind. It's the least amount of incremental work, it feels like. It's the least amount of incremental work to add at least some basic support for IRD.
Thanks.
This is Dave. It's also consistent with the way that we do domain names for IDN. It's we've got the A and U labels, and in most cases it will be most valuable if both the A label and the U label are present. And I happen to be going through like 2,000 WHOIS records at the moment for a different project, and I'm already noticing several registrars who are putting the domain name and underneath they have PUNY code or they have IDN. And so they're already getting used to and prepared for having to support both representations.
Thanks, Dave. So I'll take a note of that. Option 1 is the least common denominator. So should we go ahead and consider Model 2 and 3, or do we have other thoughts? Let's move on to Model 2. By the way, actually, Ram, would you suggest that we add an option saying that to require both a must-be-present language as well as a local language. Would that add more utility, or does it?
Yeah, I believe so. I do believe that is, in many ways, I mean, that's kind of one of the founding reasons for our group, and it would be a pity if as a group, we don't arrive at that kind of a recommendation to have both.
Sure.
This is Dave. In fairness, since Jay Daly is not on the call, I think we need to convince him, or at least get him to weigh in on how strongly he would object to that, because it was his perspective that pushing the problem to the edge and allowing every registrar to make a decision on what language would be most appropriate to support and have that information stored in the registries was, in his mind, the only solution. So I sympathize and actually, you know, have my own, you know, opinion that you really do need a common denominator. But Jay's argument is probably compelling to an awful lot of people.
Okay. This is Steve again.
So then, Steve, this is Ram. That then makes the case that maybe you should add Model 4, which is what Jay is advocating, which I will unkindly state as status quo.
Well, I'm not sure Jay is referring to the status quo.
I know. I'm actually smiling as I say that, hoping that Jay will actually listen to it and get all riled up. He's a good friend, but we should probably, you know, list that option as well.
Okay, but let me take that down and make sure that, you know, Jay's what Jay's, you know, proposal is actually is. All right, that's fine. Okay. So for Model 2, so under the model, registrars will provide a point of contact to deal with translation issues. And Andrew was saying that could pose higher costs in terms of personnel, in terms of support cost. Right, Andrew? Higher cost than in terms of just simply investing in technology.
That's correct.
Okay. Are there any others from operating a registrar would like to comment on? No? Okay. I think there are a few more members in the working group that are operating a registrar, and I will also get their feedback on this offline. So looking at Model 2's impact to registries, Ram or Edmund, actually, I was wondering if you have thoughts on the Model 2's impact to registries, or if, you know, whether we have characterized it, the impact correctly.
Sure. I think I guess generally, yes. That you mentioned about administering the domain. The registry need to know all the different languages. I'm not sure. If there are other, even from Model 1 or Model 3, how would that be different if they need to deal with the part where it is the UTF-8 data? So So right now, most of the cases registries would pass it on to registrars to deal with, at least on the GTLD perspective. I'm sure CCTLDs may be a little bit different, but GTLD perspective, most of the cases we need to work with the registrar together as well.
Okay. So are you suggesting that... Hello?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. So are you suggesting that Model 2's impact to registry is the same as, you know, Model 1's and Model 3's impact to registry? Is that right?
In a way,
okay. So when we correct me if I'm wrong. So when we put together this grid, we were thinking, for a registry, for example, maybe .asia, you have registrations from all over Asia, for example, from China, from Japan, you know, from India, or even from Pakistan, where, you know, registrar from these countries register a .asia domain. And then and for that domain, they can input any of these local languages as a registration record. This is different, in my mind, from Model 1, because in Model 1, the registry always have an option saying, you know, we want to require U.S. ASCII. So that standardized, that greatly reduced the set of languages to one. So that's my understanding, but what you're saying is, you know, that's not correct.
Well, what I'm saying is that, sure, you can operate with. I mean, it seems to me that your assumption is that we could operate based on the U.S. ASCII data, is what you're saying. But I guess what I'm saying is that in reality, if you look at the what I was saying is that if the registry needs to work with the multilingual data, then it really doesn't matter, because even in Model 1 or Model 3, there may be a situation where you would be you would have to operate with multilingual data, because the task at hand may not be, you know, trying to use that information to send an email, you know, or contact the registrant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you only assume that the task at hand is to use that information to contact the registrant, then maybe that's true. But there could be other reasons for using the data, and for all those situations, then it's not different.
Okay, I see. Okay, so I will modify that. Oh, that's an interesting thought. Ram, do you have more comments on Model 2's impact to registries?
Yeah, this is Ram. Yeah, I have somewhat orthogonal, different comments than what Edmund's comments are. I think one of the fundamental issues with Model 2 is that there is no default language, there is no default script. And there is this implicit assumption that the registries are going to get registration information in many, many languages. But in practice, what I expect will happen in a potential Model 2 implementation is that registries will just wash their hands of any validation or verification of the validity of even the scripts of the languages coming in. They will accept whatever is given by the registrar, and they'll just stick it in. And if it makes no sense, if it is Cyrillic combined with Chinese combined with Hindi, they'll just take it, stick it in the database, and then just show it. And I think we have a pretty high risk of larger amounts of garbage being stored than already is.
Okay, that's a great comment. So what you're saying in Model 2, it will actually increase data inaccuracy.
Well, that's my intuition, because it is not feasible for any registry, regardless of its size, to really attempt to understand all the different languages that are coming its way. It might be more feasible for some CCTLD registries, but, you know, even with very few exceptions, most CCTLD registries also deal with more than one language. But if you're a GTLD, you're dealing with lots of languages, and the best option is to play safe, and the way to play safe is not to make a guess at what language is attempting to be inserted into the database, to just take in whatever comes, and then that obviously leads to immense potential for gaming from those who would like to be hidden.
Yeah.
This is Aubrey. Can I ask a question about that? I guess I can see why there's a possibility of confusing information being put in, but I don't understand why it makes it any higher for people to put in garbage than if there were only one language. It seems like two indefinitely large sets that are pretty much identical. Wherever there's a registration, someone can put in garbage. And the fact that you've got more scripts to do it with doesn't change the percentage of people who are going to put in garbage.
This is Avery. I think semantically what you're saying is right, but linguistically, in a 7-bit ASCII world, you cannot put in multilingual garbage into the system at all. You can try to put it in, and the registry will simply reject it. In an 8-bit world, you can just put in more or less anything. You can put dingbats in, and they'll just get accepted because it's just UTF-8. You cannot really do that. So yes. Semantically, however, you could put in Mickey Mouse in ASCII, and you could put in, Disney World as the address, and that is garbage also. Or you could put in, ABCDEFG as the registrant name. That is also garbage. So functionally, it's no different. But in just in terms of the variety of ways to confound somebody, I think increases quite a bit with UTF-8 because you could simply throw in all kinds of special characters, including potentially, hidden characters that do masks and, do funky things that you cannot really do in 7-bit ASCII.
Okay, so this is Audrey again. So what you're saying is the number of liars doesn't change. There's just more creativity for them to lie with.
That's right, more ways to lie.
Okay, I'm not sure how much of a difference it makes, but okay.
This is Owen. Just to kind of point out as an example on this, which I recently took over my company's Chinese domain names, and noticed that over a period of years, a number of individuals had registered my company as three different ways, in Chinese characters, in straight English characters, and then also in transliterated from Chinese characters. And this is all legitimate, but anybody trying to look or determine what was going on would certainly need a wild variety of ways to look at and translate that. So I guess without some sort of common way to enter data, then anything goes.
It's Andre. Just a side comment. Putting the garbage and the wrong information into the registry is a is a little bit different topic, and it's not related actually to the, you know, to the mainstream of our work group, because, you know, putting the best, you know, appropriate information into the database, you know, should be controlled by the different needs. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Julie. I just wanted to let you all know that Steve Sheng unfortunately had to leave the call for another engagement. He did want me to suggest to this group, and we'll also suggest this in our follow-up with our notes from this meeting, that if you could all take a good look at the matrix draft as it is now. Steve has noted your various suggestions and comments, but if you have further comments as far as any inaccuracies you see in the language in the matrix, if you could please send them to the list, we would certainly appreciate that. And, of course, we have about 5 minutes now, so we can continue with this discussion as well. Any other comments on the ways that Model 2 can perhaps increase data inaccuracy? I know Rom and Owen and Andre and Aubrey have all provided comments. Do others have comments? Okay. Any comments in general on any additional comments on Model 2? Probably, go ahead. Someone ready to speak?
This is Ram. In looking at these three models, to me, it feels like Model 2 epitomizes the highest cost with the lowest impact and the most amount of extra confusion. So that's how I would look at Model 2.
Other comments on that? Do others agree or disagree? That's a helpful comment, Ram. I appreciate it. I've made note of it. Do you have any general comments you'd like to note on Model 3, Ram? Not to put you on the spot, but just in glancing through Model 3, any general comments and from yourself and others?
Yeah, this is Andre. I have a question regarding the transliteration service. If anybody knows that there are accepted standards of transliteration between different characters exists in most of the languages, we definitely have one for Cyrillic, which really sets the rule how to transliterate between the Russian Cyrillic and the ASCII. So if members of our work group have this knowledge, please share. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre. This is Julie. So your question, if I understood it right, is are there standards that we should be aware of as far as translating from other scripts into English? As you've mentioned, there's standards for transliteration from Cyrillic. Ram, do you know if there are do you know of any standards relating to translation, say, from scripts in India?
This is Ram. I know of some, but not any protocol-defined standards, you know, that would work, say, in a W3C standards track or IETF standards track manner. I mean, there are local language institutes that provide, you know, specific guides. But on the computer science side, or the combination of computer science and linguistics, I'm not aware of something that is commonly available. I had a separate point that I wanted to make, Julie, when you have a moment.
Please, go ahead, Ron.
Okay. On Model 3, I think it makes sense to separate and be explicit about translation versus transliteration. Now, the point seems rather obvious, but actually it's very meaningful when you get into linguistics, because in some languages, a translation can actually result in a different word or a different meaning in the must-be-present language than if you do a transliteration. And so I worry a little bit about translation and or transliteration being juxtaposed one to the other, because I think the unintended consequences can be pretty big if you go for translation versus transliteration.
Yes, it is exactly different meanings. Thank you.
This is Julie. Thank you, Ron. That's a very important point, and thank you, Andre, also for asserting that as well. It's I think one that we need to make sure we make clear in this matrix and also into any results we communicate out of this working group. Any other comments with respect to Model 3? We can, of course, delve into it more deeply on the next call, but I was just wondering if there are any more generalized comments.
This is Avery.
Please, I heard Avery. If you might go first, and
just
then...
Just quickly
and then.
On your question. Also, with Hebrew, while there is practice that probably comes out of linguistic language institutes in the country, I don't know if there being anything standardized for translation, automatic translation or anything, or automatic transliteration.
This is Julie. Thank you, Aubrey. That's helpful. Who else wanted to comment?
Yeah, this is Edmund.
Yes, please.
I have a couple of general comments, actually. One is that there seems to be an assumption in terms of when registrar needs to deal with providing the information or translation into another form, that the registrar is only dealing with a local where they operate in. But because of the nature of the business, then they may be getting registrations in many different places. Knowing how to transliterate or translate between, say, Russian or Chinese doesn't mean that you would be able to do the same when presented with a registrant coming from India, for example. So having some sort of a model where, I guess that brings me to the second question or second comment, is what do you mean by transliteration? In a way, what are we trying to serve? If we have a form whereby the registrant needs to provide to the registry, and then for users, for everywhere to use, does that form have to make a lot of human sense, or does it just have to be operational so that, you know, I can easily cut and paste and compare that data? What I'm trying to say is that let's say you take an address and you say you provide a quote unquote transliteration of that, and essentially it's in some encoded form in ASCII. Does that qualify as a form that is usable for the user who only can deal with U.S. ASCII characters?
I cannot.
Am I making sense? Okay.
Transliteration. It's a verbal translation. It's like you type the sounded name, like Andre, you can type it in English, in Latin script, or you can type it in Russian, Cyrillic. It's not a translation of the meaning, it's how the word is sounded.
Andre, this is Owen. You say it's the phonetic pronunciation as opposed to what the word would mean in the in a different language.
That's right. It's a phonetic, I forgot the word, it's a phonetic thing, and it can be automated if in the country or in the language there is accepted standard on how to do it.
This is Edmund. Yes, I understand that, and I understand transliteration, and you know there are transliteration standards for I think a lot of languages, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, all have pretty standard transliteration or romanization forms. What I'm sort of asking is whether there is contemplation on any model or any possible model whereby a the form of a set of data is because one of the things that we seem to be trying to solve is that yes, we want local users to be able to provide contacts in their own language, but then we have a challenge for an international user, don't know where they are right now, to use that data, and there seems to be an interest to provide that in a form where the international user can potentially use, and that international user being in some form backwards compatible to what they expect today.
Okay, I can give you one very simple example. My home address can be written in the Russian Cyrillic. Of course, we all use the Russian Cyrillic. But if you transliterate it, if you type it in Latin and send a letter to me, the post office will find my address and will deliver your letter to my house.
I see. That might not happen for some languages, then.
Yes,
And for address, any type of automated transliteration or translation would definitely pose a challenge for Chinese, I would know for sure. But I can't be sure for Japanese or Korean. So I guess that's a good point. My question is whether we want the information to be so operational that you can put it on an envelope and then send it to the person. If that is the case, then any type of machine translation won't reach that.
No, I was just giving you an example. I'm not saying that it will work for every language on the planet.
Right. So my main question is whether we need it, whether that is a requirement. If for Model 3 or any type of model where we say, you know, we give two sets of data, do we need to be able to must we be able to use that data and actually post a post address to the person, a snail mail to the particular person, or is it just a set of data for, you know, supporting some sort of comparison usage or, you know, other type of operational usage sufficient? I'm not sure whether I'm making sense, but basically the question is when we if there are if we accept multiple formats of a particular address, and we have a model whereby you must essentially provide it in a particular format, then is how operational does that data need to be? Could I provide a transliteration in the sense that it's backwards compatible to your existing systems, but you might not be able to actually use that, put it on an envelope and send it to the person? Is that acceptable?
Edmund, this is Ram. I think this is a really deep question that we should probably, you know, table for our next call. But I think it is a deep question because it points to what is the intended use and how we represent that data is dependent upon the intended use. As you were explaining the problem, I was imagining that my response would be vastly different based on whether I was a paralegal at an intellectual property firm researching something versus if I was an attorney who was going to sue somebody versus if I was somebody in law enforcement. My answer to that same question that you pose would be quite different. So I think the usage, the expected usage model will has a significant impact. The but I think it's an important question that perhaps as a working group we should plan to address and either put aside explicitly or take on explicitly, but not just leave it unaddressed. My point earlier was really to advocate against translation as a model, because I think much danger lies in that, going down that path.
Ram, can I ask, when you say translation, automatic translation, you mean translation by people, you mean translation by the person putting it in, or do you mean any translation?
Yeah, I mean translation as it is represented in the matrix document there, which uses translation interchangeably with transliteration. I mean it in that form. In general, I have trouble with translation unless there's some certification of some sort accompanying it, which increases the cost, et cetera, Avery. Because automatic translations, you know, can result in more of a Tower of Babel rather than less.
Okay, so you did mean mostly automatic and specifically in the notion of three of them being done by some automatic tool, not in the version of Model 1 where someone would put in something but they would be translating it themselves.
I see where you're, this is Ram, I see where you're going. Let me parse my language a bit more carefully. Automatic translation, I would advocate very strongly against. Presented translation, I think, can be taken on the honor system, and I don't see too much of a problem with that, because mostly people giving information, you know, one can assume that they have the right intent behind them. But if you really, if we as a group are really looking for something that is reasonably bulletproof, then we have to go for a verified translation model, if you're going to go for translation at all. So that's the precise parameters of what I mean about translation.
Ron, this is Julie, and working group members. I want to point out we're now 12 minutes after the hour, and I know people have places they need to be. I have noted Edmund's question, and I think it's an excellent one for us to look at more carefully on our next call in 2 weeks, and also to gather up any additional changes to the matrix and to discuss more fully Model 3 in detail. Is there anything anybody would like to add before we adjourn the meeting? Then I want to thank everyone for being on the call, and particularly those who are joining us at a difficult hour. We will rotate the time for the next call, and we'll get into well ahead of the call, and we will be sending around notes from this meeting in the next couple of days. Thank you, everyone, and have a good morning, afternoon, evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.